Hello again, and welcome to another episode of BitNote with David Collins. We'll be playing some great video game music and talking a bit about the games that they're from. Hope you have a listen and enjoy yourselves. So, let's start things off with a very atmospheric game that I think goes in a very interesting direction. It's actually kind of funny, this game, because some people almost didn't think it had a music track, but it kind of did. But it's more ambient and sort of thematic. But I'll play the menu theme and talk more about the game afterwards. Enjoy! Quite the theme, isn't it? That is the menu theme by Martin Stig Andersson, and it is from Limbo by Playdead. Playdead being a Swedish company that was set up just to make the game. And is probably going to make a game after it, so it wasn't just a one-time hit. Limbo is a very interesting game. It was released a few years ago. It's kind of like an indie game, so in other words, it was never released in a box, released through digital download. It's a small, self-contained, but very interesting game, and it is basically set in about a small little boy who's making his way through a monochrome, threatening world, trying to find his lost sister. Now, it's a very strange game. It's very, very atmospheric. You can just hear from the music that they, you know, really pay attention to what the mood of the game is, and the visuals of the game aren't that better. The background is normally fuzzy. The foreground is usually dark black shapes that sort of like an sometimes almost abstractly define the way you're in. You go from sort of a foresty area to more city built up factory area, and the whole time there are dangers or problems you have to deal with as you're running and jumping and bouncing around the place. One thing I love about the game is, you know, there's no tutorials. Nothing pops up and says press this button to do this or that button to do that. You figure it out yourself, and then you're just kind of immersed as you're just trying to make your way through the world. You can make the boy jump and run and pull things, but that's kind of it. And as you go through things, you deal with all this crazy stuff, like a group that's somehow shooting blow darts at you, and this gigantic spider, and all this sort of creepy environmental things as you work around the game. The earlier parts of the game, you're kind of like running and jumping, and I actually think the first half of the game is kind of the better half. You're dealing with a lot of threats, you end up dying a lot, sometimes in pretty stark and brutal and violent ways. I know you're a kid, you're basically represented by a silhouette, and pretty much everything seems trying to kill you, whether it be suddenly falling rocks or giant spiders or all these suddenly hostile people, or even if you end up in water that's too deep, you end up drowning. But as you go through the first half of the game, you're kind of reacting to everything and jumping and trying to get out of the way of events and try not to let a log fall on you. I mean, a simple idea, you come up with a log so you pull that's in your way, so you pull it towards you, and then you have to jump out of the way so it doesn't crush you. Or this other thing where a spider keeps trying to spike his legs at you, and you have to try to like get out of the way and maneuver a bear trap into the path of the spider leg and stuff. And other times, more simply, when you're basically dealing with a gigantic pool of water and you have to break off the top of a tree and get it to land and then drag it into the water and use it to sail across. So I mean, the first half, there's a lot of like environmental manipulations and trying to figure out the way to just keep progressing, keep going from left to right, hoping you'll reach the end at the end. And towards the second half of the game, you get more technical problem solving, which is more like standard puzzle games, which I find a little annoying. You know, like you have to move a tire into the right place, you have to move these pulleys to move things in, and then you get all these devices that suddenly start manipulating gravity. So you've got to flip gravity one way and then move an object into place and flip it up so you can move it over the roof across an obstacle. But it's still, no matter which way you play it, the game still just is very atmospheric. And, you know, especially in the first half, the sense of atmosphere and the sense of just dealing with all the threats, it just very much comes across. Of course, being arty, it also means that it does have its drawbacks. When you start the game, you just suddenly see the silhouette of your character, and it still stays a silhouette, you just see two white circles as eyes. It's kind of creepy like that. But you just see him lying on the ground, and then after a while you suddenly twig, and then you press buttons on the controller and he gets up and you start moving him around. But when I said, okay, a kid walks up in the forest and the only thing I know is he's meant to find a sister, I just know that that game is not going to have a satisfactory ending. Because games like this are always just ambivalent. They don't have a clear start, they don't have a clear end. They're all trying to be abstract and interpretive and make what you will of it. But to me it seems like, well, sheesh, the writer couldn't even bother to actually communicate a story idea correctly. Okay, I'm being extremely cynical. And I'm actually one of those guys who believes that it's really annoying when the writer spells out the plot right in front of the audience and leaves nothing to the imagination, because I feel the audience should be intelligent, and part of the fun part of the story is what the audience adds themselves. But with an arty game like this, it's like one of those Sudoku puzzles which has too few numbers in it. There's just more than one way you can solve the Sudoku puzzle, so what's the point in even giving us? It's not a puzzle to work out, it's just a make your own Sudoku puzzle. You can interpret it multiple ways. I will say that, you know, the boy, he walks across a threatening landscape and every so often comes across this female figure who may be his sister, and will he reach her at the end? But obviously, play the game to find out, and then depending on who you are, I think a lot of people felt it was just not quite the most concrete ending they could have gotten. But for me it was, well, at least they didn't just have him fall down a dark pit and just have the game end there or something. At least the ending was something, you know. Boy, I'm very, very cynical at the moment. I wonder why. I don't know. I've actually been thinking recently about how game endings tend to be terrible. I don't mean that in a good... I don't mean to be cynical about that. I mean, it used to be simple, just as long as you got a nice animation and the boss ended up and then maybe some text, which was, in the early days of computer, having text was a great thing, you know, it was okay. But it's just... so many games. I think Far Cry was the first game that I realized, boy, this game has a terrible ending. You basically have a bit of a boss fight, and then you have to make your way through into this volcano. Then you finally confront the scientist, have one cutscene of you shooting the scientist, and then going off in a speedboat. I'm thinking, what the heck? I mean, I'm not going off in a bit of a tangent here, but I mean, a lot of games just don't have good endings. I mean, a lot of TV programs and movies and other stuff, I mean, they mightn't have good endings either. It's very hard to get an ending right. A good ending sums up everything you've had so far, helps you just take it in, enjoy what you've got, what you've had, and the great experience, and then lets you settle back into reality. And most video games don't quite do that at all. I mean, for a start, it's very tricky to do it because, you know, the person might always want to immediately dive back into the video game. And some video games have a system whereby even though the story is finished, they still have to come up with an excuse for letting the player actually keep playing in the same game world, you know, like sandbox games. So you've saved the city, so now you can just wander around the city and do whatever you want. So, but at the same time, I just think, you know, more games just need to have just a full satisfactory ending that says, hey, I did a good job here, I completed the game, pat on the back, maybe a couple of interesting things, and please, dear gosh, don't throw in a terrible cliffhanger for a sequel that may or may not have happened. Because no one likes that. Ever. Even outside of video games. Okay. So, moving from a game that has a somewhat ambiguous ending, to a game that has multiple endings! Yes, one of the most underused thing about video games is that, yes, you can have more than one ending for a video game. In fact, having more than one ending for a video game can be pretty awesome. Definitely. And I think that one game that really demonstrates it, or at least shows you what this can do, is a favorite of mine, unfortunately not of others, but a favorite of mine, Alpha Protocol. Why don't I just play up the first track and chat more about the game after.
Thank you.
So, my dear friends, what you just heard there was Your Weapon is Choice by Jason Graves from Alpha Protocol by Obsidian Entertainment. Jason Graves is a British composer, made a lot of other video game soundtracks, including that for Dead Space, which was a survival horror, which I won't be talking about this episode. So, Alpha Protocol. This, I have to say, is a favourite of mine. It took a bit to get into it, but once you do, once you really feel out the game, it is great. It's a modern-day spy thriller role-playing video game. You play the role of Michael Thornton, a spy who's suddenly been recruited in by a spy agency called Alpha Protocol that is such a secret that the United States government deny it exists, even though they give money to them, and then encourage them to just try to get illegal funds to try to supplement their budget. And I'm not joking about that. So essentially, it's super secret, top secret, you know, probably violating a bunch of international laws and conventions, but still it exists, and it's out there to deal with terrorist threats. I know it sounds cliche at first, and indeed the first set of missions you'd have is cliche, because there's been a terrorist attack against this airliner, and everyone's going, what the damn, we got to do something about this. So you're going out, you get sent out to the Middle East, and you have to bring down this Arab terrorist. Now, you go out there, and there are a lot of missions you do, but after that, things change very, very quickly. It's not just about the terrorists. In fact, it soon gets clear that it's about that the terrorist plot was just one part in a much bigger conspiracy, because what is a good spy tale without a conspiracy? And it's soon you're trotting around the world in order to find out the truth and deal justice to those who are doing bad stuff around the world, including what they probably involved with that airline. So essentially, it's basically, you know, one guy against the world spy thing, using resources, building up contacts, trying to get the right technology sort of game. And I mean, it does involve contacts. A lot of things that a lot of spy video games miss out on is actually, you know, you need to talk to people, build up an information network, try to get on people's good side. And one of the great things about Alpha Protocol is there's a really great conversation system. You know, you talk with people and you have quick reactions in order to choose what you say next. And you can either get on someone's good side so they think you're your best friend, or you can utterly piss them off so that they want your death. And sometimes this will mean that they will actually try to kill you. And I think with at least one character, you know, whether they're on the good side or bad side will mean whether they actually want to kill you or whether they actually want to help you. The game's theme is actually also very well done. There's a lot of different spy themes out there. You've got, you know, sort of the more escapist of the Bond things, with going a lot of gadgets and having a lot of fun and just going on crazy adventures and stuff. And I'm talking the earlier Bond, not the more recent ones. And then, of course, you've got the more recent Bonds, where everything's, you know, dark, more serious, more gritty and everything. And then, of course, you've got stuff like, 24, where there's an anxious, you know, take down the terrorist threat and all this stuff with Arab things. And then, of course, you've got the Jason Bourne approach. I mean, you know, which is kind of more realistic, kind of more decisive, kind of like you got to plot your moves methodically against a great, powerful thing. And one of the great things about Alpha Protocol is that it merges all these styles of spy movies pretty much seamlessly. I mean, maybe someone else is going to come in and say how I'm wrong, and if they do, well, good luck to them. But I just really like how they do an expert merging. I mean, you know, they try, it gives the game a bit of gravity, a bit of seriousness in taking down the enemy, but it still lets it have a bit of sense of humor, a bit some fun, some jokes. So you're still, you know, not taking everything so damn seriously all the time. You can actually have a joke at someone's expense, and this goes crazy when you deal with one of the Russian guys who's completely obsessed with 80s American pop culture. Oh boy. I thought that whole section of the game was just hilarious. But there's also more severe sections, and I don't think I'm spoiling this by saying a couple of the times in the game you have to make a literal hard choice. And let me just say, it might involve the choice between someone you love or just really, really like, and then a whole other scenario. But moving back, choice, like I said, is one of the whole things about the game. It actually matters what you do in any given situation. I think this is one of the things I love, because it makes me think about things. I think in an earlier section of the game, there's basically this arms dealer, and you make your way through the compound, and I think in my case, I just set off one of his devices and blew up some stuff randomly. But I finally get to him, and he proposes me with an offer. Either he keeps helping me and supplying me with information and I let him live, or I just kill him there and then. And of course, which he obviously doesn't want to do, because I'm still trying to search for this great big terrorist leader. And then I'm looking for a choice. I mean, obviously taking down a terrorist leader is a really important thing, but do I want to leave up this arms dealer as a result of that? I mean, isn't this arms dealer going to lead to additional deaths? But then again, preventing the terrorist leader is going to lead with deaths, is going to prevent deaths. So am I just trading lives for lives? What's the point in trying to save lives if in order to do that you sent other people to death? And it actually just made me think about it. I mean, there are a couple of moral questions like that in the thing. I decided to basically take his offer, although at the same point I basically blackmailed him and extorted him for money, which had the advantage of getting me money and also making him think that I'm more serious about the offer. But then when I get back to the base, you turn on the TV and apparently a bunch of armed people stormed and killed a bunch of 17 American military men in a base, and it was because they had more advanced weaponry than normal. Consequences, my friend. The game is great for the consequences. For instance, there's actually this adversary in the game, and essentially I managed to get in good esteem with the game, and we had a battle, and then he did something unforgivable, and then basically we had this one-on-one confrontation. But halfway through the battle, when I damaged him enough, he just said, screw this, I'm out of here, and he went off, and I wasn't able to face him again until the climax of the game. However, I was looking up on YouTube, because this is what you do when you don't have time to play every variant, and I looked up, and apparently there's this version of the game where if you're smarmy enough, if you piss enough people off in the game, and you piss him particularly, then instead of just bailing out halfway through your first fight with him, he'll just suddenly say, screw this, and then if you taunt him enough during that fight, he'll suddenly, instead of escaping, try to finish you off, and in the process you'll have the opportunity to kill him then and there, and not have to worry about him when at the end of the game. So it's just the game is full with little moments like that. A lot of subtle things about how people will tell your reactions and everything, whether they're good and everything. And that's something I just love about the game. It's just, it pays attention to the actions that you want, and it goes along with it. Now, one of the unfortunate things about Alpha Protocol, and really I shouldn't do this, if you like something, you should just like it, and it's good, and it reflects something in you, and it's something that you want to see more of in the world, and you should like it, and that should be it. But unfortunately, the internet exists. And when I was looking on it, I saw an article give this game 3 out of 10. Okay. Skipping aside all that, apparently not everyone likes this game, which is fine, but it's kind of frustrating. If you see a game that has so much stuff that you could bring to the table, you want it to go on, you want it to spread, you want other people to really like it. And when so many people just either dismiss it or don't see it, it's just so frustrating. You're like, can't you see this? And the truth is, a lot of people actually did kind of see it, or kind of did, but it's just, unfortunately, there were a lot of other stuff in the game that just turned them off ahead of time, and it's just frustrating when something like this happens. It's just, one of the things of the game is that even though in some ways you're going around with a spy and you're shooting terrorists and there's a bit of stealth and everything, a lot of people just played it as a straight action game where you just jump in, shoot, and everything's fine. Whereas, in fact, the game is more of a traditional statistics playing role-playing game where you just have to build up the right stats and you have to build up your abilities, and if you don't have enough skill in actually handling a pistol, like skill experience points accumulated to it, then it's quite possible you missed a pistol shot even if you manage to get the target straight on. It's kind of something that Deus Ex actually did a while back with the same thing of experience and everything. And even though Deus Ex was a hugely revolutionary game, even that got kind of slammed by critics. So it's kind of funny to see this sort of thing happen again. But in all fairness, a few other areas of the game are a little unpolished or just maybe not quite work as well. And honestly, if you go off near a grenade and it kills you, the death animation, in fact, the death animation of the main character, Michael Thornton, is utterly hilarious in nearly every circumstance. It's just, it's got like this sort of rag doll thing where he just flops about, but just sometimes he'll just pull off some stuff. And he always holds on to the gun, which I never quite figured out. I mean, you're blown up by a grenade, but you seem to still hold on to your gun as you go fly through the air. I don't know. But the important thing is, I did enjoy the game, and while I would like to see other games just take notes from it, or even if they did a sequel and just really tried to have everything that was great about it, but just fix, tweak up everything that was a problem, I'd love it. But such is the way it happens, and at least we have the game, and I think it's a great way of doing things. So, I'll leave you now with the main theme of Alpha Protocol. It was a collaboration between Jason Graves and BT, and I'll leave it at that. So, this has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening.